Vectis Radio. Vectis Radio. FM 104.6. Bringing the island's community together.
The Mid-Morning Show is proudly sponsored by PC Consultants, the island's leading provider of IT service, consultancy and support to businesses, public sector and private clients across the island. PC Consultants, an award-winning company celebrating 25 years in business.
Good afternoon. We've got a very chilled chief exec from the Isle of Wight Council in. We've got John Metcalfe in. Hi, John.
Hello, Ian. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. You look very relaxed.
Yeah, I'd like to think I am, but I'm not sure what you can ask me, so we'll wait and see.
Well, I have sort of touched on, you know, some of what we're going to talk about, but you never know. You might chuck in something that might make you squirm in your seat a bit. Let's hope not.
This is not about football, so we're okay.
Well, I was going to start off by, because you sat in the wrong chair for a start, I was going to put a Portsmouth flag on the screen here.
Oh, I've had two presented to me in office already this week.
I know, and and I just wanted to make it a hat trick, if you like.
But yeah, thanks for that.
So you're a big Sunderland fan?
Yes, I am. But you know, it was a good result for Portsmouth. Hats off to them. I think promotion's important for both teams, though, isn't it? So hopefully they'll both get promoted next at the end of the season.
Do you know what? You're never ever going to be fulfilled being a Sunderland fan. I thought about this earlier on. I thought, hang on a minute. I don't know how old you are, John, but I'm guessing you're roughly the same age as me, and you would have remembered Bob Stokoe running up to Jim Montgomery.
Yeah, that's right.
1973. How old were you then?
I was seven then. And I remember watching it at home, and my brother supported Leeds and I supported Sunderland.
Oh, wow.
And it was a bit of a Barney in the house, I think, about it. But yeah, we live on our past glories, though, don't we?
Because since then, it's downhill. Isn't it? Nothing since then.
No, nothing. Not a thing.
Not one trophy.
But it's the hope that kills you, isn't it? There's 40,000 people turn up every week hoping.
Oh, there you were the other week. You must have been sort of hopeful.
Well, do you know, I couldn't really watch it, so I just had to listen to it on the radio.
Do you know what, in the process of doing, we're pointing out that here we are, Chief Executive of the Council is a human being.
You know, that's, I like to think so.
We forget sometimes because we just look at, you know, people that in your, you know, jobs like yours and politicians, we just think that they're there just for the kick in and the knock in and so on and so forth. But underneath it all, you're a Sunderland fan and you ain't got much to shout about.
No.
So maybe we should go easy on you.
So maybe I'm in the perfect job then, really. Yeah. All keeps going.
What's the toughest thing about being the chief exec?
Gosh, I think it's always, there's so many balls that you've always got in the air that you're always juggling, trying to make sure that the whole of the council is progressing in the way that everybody wants it to. And the fact is, you can't please all of the people all of the time, because everybody wants you to do something that's slightly different. They always think that you could be doing more in one area than you are, and everybody always wants a little bit more. And I can understand a lot of that because, you know, we have got a really strong community on the island that it is very powerful. It works well together. It's very cohesive, and it would be great if we could do so much more for it. But we're limited by what we've got to do by law, by finance, by people, and we have to just try and make best use of those resources. So it is frustrating that we can't do more, but we do try and make the best of what we have.
What I've remembered the question I was going to ask you last time we didn't get a chance to do, and what frustrates you the most?
Do you know, I think last time I'd remembered it, I had a clever answer prepared as well, but...
Hey, look, we can come back to it if you want, but...
I think the frustration is that people expect... And I think it's getting less, but I think people do have this expectation that the council can solve everyone's problems straight away, and that whatever happens, it's turned to the council. And whilst I think local authorities and public services over the many, many years have fed that myth, because, you know, we've wanted to take things over in times where things were good in the sort of 60s and 70s where councils were really growing. I think that we're moving away from that now, and you know, people don't expect so much now, although we would still like to provide as much. So it's just that bit about we'll do what we can, but we have a finite amount of resource and people to go around, and it is frustrating that we can't do as much as we want to do.
Do you get? I was trying to ask you the question while we were, you know, chatting off air just now, and sometimes we probably are not quite aware of what the council's role is, and sometimes we'll say, oh, blooming council, they ought to do this, they ought to do that. And it's not really their role to do so.
Yeah, I think we do get that quite a lot. And you're going to ask me for an example now, and of course my head's gone completely blank. But
I've got plenty, John. we'll get to it.
I think something, legislation prescribes something over like 2,000 functions that a council like ours has to provide. So people will see that we clean the streets and that we mend the roads and that we empty the bins and we cut the parks and look after the parks. But they may not always see the fact that, you know, we run the training standards department, we do all the food inspections, we have a massive amount of money that we spend on social services, especially adult social services. So, you know, supporting people in care homes or supporting people to stay at home, you know, when they've got a bit older and a bit frail and need some support. So we run a vast range of services that are all actually completely different in lots of cases.
So shall we point out that it's not your fault that the high street, some of the shops have shut down?
I think it's fair, but people will then say, well, it's because of business rates and the council's charging too much for business rates and therefore the shops can't afford to pay their business rates. But what people don't understand is the council doesn't set the business rates. Business rates are set nationally by government. We just collect them and then we give them back to government. There is something positive changing in the sense that government are moving to allow us to keep the business rates that we keep, which will ultimately incentivise us to make sure that we've got more businesses in the shops or more businesses on the island, because that will generate more money coming back in to fund public services. But at the moment, you know, business rates are set by government and collected by government.
Yeah, I'm glad you made that point, because, you know, people kind of, I don't know, they don't read the small print. It's easy just to say, oh, Blooming Council, the rates are too high, that's why these companies are going out of business. And it's really, really sad to see, and it's not rocket science, you know, but how much clout do you have with government? Can you ever go, is there ever a point where you go back to government and you say, hey, look, this is a picture of our high street here 20 years ago, and this is a picture now, and we think that this is all down to the rates being set too high by government. Is there any chance you could do something about it?
We do a lot of, we meet with government very regularly. We often go and chat to civil servants and put the island's case, and we've been very successful recently in arguing the fact that the island does need a bit of special recognition. We call it the island's unique circumstances within the government's funding regime. And at the moment, the government is consulting on that, but has recognised the island and it has actually referenced the island in its own consultation document as, you know, should be treated in a slightly different way for funding. So that's been a positive of our lobbying. In terms of things like business rates and high streets, we work much more collectively with things like the Local Government Association, where we collectively lobby as councils to try and persuade government to think about how it does things in a slightly different way. And what tends to happen is government's response, and government of any colour's response, tends to be to create projects or schemes that you can bid for funding for. So at the moment, we've just put a bid to the High Streets Fund to try and draw down some money from government through a competitive process to improve Newport High Street and the lot of Newport High Street and help businesses in the High Street. And, you know, if that fund is available again in future years, we'll probably focus on Ryde and then we'll go on to Sandown. So government tends to make funds available through bidding pots rather than just simply saying, you know, every council can have a reduction on their business rates and get on that way.
Is that the best way of doing it?
I'm not sure it's the best way of doing it, but it is the way that as a country, we seem to have adopted over many, many years. Every time there's a change required, we tend to tinker with legislation, and this is historical. We tinker with legislation and we slightly change things. We put funding pots forward rather than do a radical review of how things should be funded. I think the only radical review that's going through at the moment, which may really affect the council, is the review of adult social care funding. The government have been consulting on, I should say, well, not consulting on, they've been drafting what they call a green paper for views, but it's been about a year in publication and we're still not sure when that comes out. So when we do something major or quite radical, then there is a long consultation process that we need to go through.
Do you know what, it does seem like a really long, drawn-out thing, and you know that they're busy at the moment with this Brexit thing, so they ain't going to get that sorted out. In the meantime, you have to put up with the sharp end.
Well, I mean, I think the phrase I tend to use is we just have to play the cards we're dealt, and, you know, we've got, you know, I think at the moment we've got a reasonable hand. We're doing pretty well as a council. We came in under budget last year or just short of our planned expenditure, so that was a good place to be. We've got very good financial controls in terms of how we spend the money and where we spend the money, and we've got good processes for that. So the cards have been dealt. We're lobbying wherever we possibly can, but in a way, sometimes you just have to get on and do the job to the best of your ability. And we've got a really strong corporate management team. We've got a really strong administration and group of members that just want to try and get on and make the best of things. Because, you know, if you keep banging your head against the wall, ultimately you start to get a headache eventually.
Yeah, I bet. I don't think I could do your job. Even if I had the skills, I don't think I could do it. Because I'd be like thinking, hang on a minute. You've taken a year now to solve something. You mentioned then, you know, this green paper that's coming out. And we all know that you're kind of busy doing nothing. You haven't voted on any... Well, you have voted, but you haven't achieved anything. And you must be so... Because you and your chaps that have been in here, and the ladies too, they've been so, so professional because they never run anybody down. You know, whereas I look at it and I think, hang on a minute, if up country, if you was to get in that big house of yours, if you was to get things sorted out a little bit quicker... you'd be able to do your job better.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Because, you know, everyone's got a role in the country. Everyone's got a role in how the country's government and how people want to do things. And, you know, when you talk about Brexit, I mean, the country was split very, very close. So you can understand some of the tension and some of the arguments that are ongoing. But from our perspective, we haven't got the ability to influence those arguments. All we can do is influence what we do and shape what we do. So, you know, we're very focused on trying to do that. And, you know, I think I might have said to you before, I still think I've got one of the best chief executive jobs in the country, if not the best chief executive job in the country, because, you know, we've got a great team. We live in a great place. We've got a really strong community. You know, everybody wants to do the right things for the island and help the island develop in the right way and achieve great things. So, you know, why wouldn't I want to be jobbing and really learn it the way I do?
You've got Portsmouth across the water there winning trophies, so, you know, someone to support as well.
Well, Sunderland never do well when they take penalties at Wembley.
There are so many things I want to ask you, but I say it must be, I say, going back to the frustration, wouldn't it be better if we could go back to government and say, look, this green paper that you've been hanging around and it's taken so long, and in the meantime people are suffering and we're having to deal with that suffering as well. You know, they would say to you, look, you've got to build X amount of houses. We'll come on to houses probably, properly in a moment. Yeah. But there'll be a date. They'll say, you've got to do this by. Wouldn't it be great if you could go back to them and say, green paper, by next week, hurry up, get on with it?
It would be nice, wouldn't it? But that's not a conversation that we can have. I think, the important thing is that people aren't suffering because of it, because we're doing the right things to make sure that people don't suffer. It becomes harder and harder to do those right things, and the choices get harder and harder about how you can do things and how much you can help people. So, as I said earlier, whilst you might want to go the extra mile, you probably can't. You can only go the first mile. But in a way, nobody's suffering because of it, because of the fantastic work that our team and our staff do in terms of supporting the community, the neighbourhood, and the people that they're there to help. So it will be great to get it resolved, because it's always unresolvable. For as long as it's unresolved, it becomes an issue and it's always at the back of your mind. But, you know, we have to really get on and just, as I said earlier, play the cards we're dealt, and hopefully at some point they'll catch up and deal the next hand.
You're so professional. Because I would have been saying, come on, government, get yourselves sorted out, then we can do better things and so on. We can look after everybody. We're waiting for your green paper. Hurry up.
Yeah, but there's nothing to be gained by it, I think, though. The government know that that's got to come through. People like the local government association are lobbying to get the green paper through for adult social care. It ends up being... The issue is to what extent can we help, and to what extent will that lobbying make a difference? I think, you know, as I said earlier, you can waste an awful lot of time on that process, where that time could be better spent making the lives of people on the island that much better within the arrangements that we already have.
Sure. So they're busy sorting out Brexit. And what does Brexit actually mean to the council? Does it stop you from doing? Is it hampering? You know, does it not mean anything? Is it just more, business as normal? Are there any issues with it? Are you watching this and thinking, right, okay, if it goes that way, then we've got to do this. If it goes this way, we've got to do that.
Well, we have got a number of plans that we've been working through that we talk about very regularly as a corporate management team, because, as you say, we're not sure where things will lie. And a lot of that will come down to how the current European legislation then gets translated into UK legislation. Because lots of the things that we rely on at the moment as legislation are enshrined in EU law. So we have to have an eye to that, if you like, in terms of, well, how's that going to come across? How are we then going to be able to apply those laws and do what we currently do? We're also very focused at the moment, working with our colleagues in Portsmouth and Southampton and Hampshire, in terms of just looking at what the impact might be of a no-deal Brexit, in terms of if there were additional freight traffic that runs through Portsmouth, how would what impact that would have if all that freight traffic, or a lot more freight traffic, started going through Portsmouth International Port. And there's been quite a lot in the press about that recently. So we've got people who are part of something called the Local Resilience Forum, which is a grand name for all the public sector bodies in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight working collectively together to plan for civil contingencies and to make arrangements in case things get in the way of doing ordinary business. And then we found out just at the end of last week that government would like us to start to prepare for a European election.
I was coming to that.
Yeah, thanks. Well, just in case, I thought I'd get that in first, really. So just in case that comes to, just in case one is required, they've asked us to start doing some preparatory work. We'd normally take 6 to 8 months to prepare for an election, so we're going to have about 6 to 7 weeks to do that.
So you've now got to do that. I'm guessing if the vote goes the right way, there'll be no need for it, but you've got a plan for it,
well,
just in case.
We do have to plan for it, because...
Be honest, John, had you planned anything before? Let's be honest, our leader, Theresa May, said, no, Brexit means Brexit, we're going to be out, and that's it, done, dusted. So then you're looking at the calendar thinking, well, we don't have to do that, and now you are. Has it given you a headache?
Just a little bit, yes, yeah. But, I mean, we had done some early thinking, probably two or three months ago. We'd started to just, they've done a little bit of what if, and then kind of parked it to one side, because... As I keep saying, the council's got finite capacity and finite resources. If you start moving and put your resources into something that may or may not happen, you've got to kind of do it on what's the likelihood?
Right.
Because those resources could be better used for something else. But now that likelihood has increased, we've had to start to divert some resources and start to think about, well, if the government does decide that we're going to have a EU election in the country, are we ready for it? We don't take the responsibility for organising the southeast election on the island. That's organised by a regional returning officer, but we have a local returning officer who has to make the arrangements on the island.
Okay, is it a big job? And obviously there'll be a cost, but is that a cost to the council, or does the central government pay for that?
No, it's picked up by central government eventually if the election goes ahead.
Right, but eventually.
But government have also said that they'll meet our reasonable costs in terms of the preparations. So
right,
so we've got some reasonable costs to meet, but. We organise well over 70 polling stations. Each polling station's got 2 members of staff in it, a polling clerk and a presiding officer. So that's 140 staff minimum that we'd need to organise. Then we need to organise staff for the count. So all those sort of things need to be put in place, and it takes a bit of time to get hold of all those people and get them lined up to do the work.
Especially if it's something that you wouldn't really, you hadn't bargained on. And I suppose you've got to pay the money up front and then get your money back, claim it back, have you?
Well, if people work, we have to, but only if people work.
Right.
So we have to wait and see whether that progresses in that sort of way. But we have to kind of start to think about booking all the polling stations and if they're available at this late stage as well, the ones that we would normally use. So,
crikey, yeah.
We're really fortunate because, again, on the island, we've got a really good group of people who usually work and help us out with elections and counts. So we're contacting all of those. We know where all our main polling stations are, the ones that we've always used, so we can go back to all of those. So we've got a well-oiled, trusted process for organising elections. It just means we've got to do it very quickly.
Okay, so one more question on that, and then because I don't want to spend the whole time talking about elections. When will you actually know? Do you actually know whether or not it is going to take place? Is it 100%, or are we still waiting for the nod?
I think my understanding is it'll be Friday, because Friday is the last day which the UK has to declare whether we'll be taking part in the elections in order for the election to take place on the 23rd of May.
Right, okay. Gut feeling?
Too close to call, really, isn't it?
Yeah. I think we've all got an opinion on what we'd like to happen, but I think we just want it over with, don't we? I bet you do, because you can get on with your job then.
Well, again, it's back to the cards you dealt, really, isn't it? I mean, I think what people really like in business and in public sector and in life really is certainty. We all would like some certainty about what's going to happen next and when it's going to happen. So I think once we get that certainty brought to once we have some certainty, then we can think about you know, how we plan and how we respond to it. But at the moment, without certainty, you have to create two or three different plans and be prepared to use either one whenever you're ready to go.
Well, good luck with that one.
Yeah, thank you.
And you'll be waiting for Friday and thinking, oh, crikey, we've got to go through with it or not.
Yeah, well, you know, I feel like a Sunderland player about to take a penalty at Wembley, really. I'm not sure where it's going to go. It'll probably end up in the crowd.
But anywhere but the net. Yeah,
exactly.
Right, okay. How do you respond to when government tell you you've got to build 10,000 houses, by the way, on the island? And one thing we should clarify, what the 10,000 houses, we suddenly think 10,000 houses, what, in the next few years? No, how long is that over a period of?
Well, it's over a 15 to 20 year period, so it's not 10,000 houses tomorrow. And it's 10,000 houses is not that different to what we had in the previous island plan, which was agreed 7 or 8 years ago. So it's about the same amount. It works out to be about 640 houses a year. Over the lifetime of the island plan.
Have we done that in the last 10 years?
Unfortunately, we haven't. No, that's our target has been about 540 previously, and we've delivered at around about 300-350 over the course of that period, because the delivery is all down to the market. So it's all down to, you know, when the time is right financially for people to invest into to build the houses. But as I say, we've probably delivered at about 340 average over the course of the last 5 or 6 years.
Is 10,000 too many?
Well, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because, I mean, I always take it back to, so what do our own statistics as a council tell us? And what they tell us is that, you know, we've got over 2,500 island people who are island families who are on our housing register. So they're all registered in terms of needing a home.
Right. So you just clarify, what was that number again?
It's over 2,500 people who are on our, and they're just the people on the very top of the register, the most needy people in terms of what's on the register. The register itself could extend to considerably more than that.
Okay, but just to clarify, because these are the sorts of things that we need to, so people are out there and they actually know what they're talking about. Next time they're down the pub and they're saying, blooming council, 2,500 people. Who makes up these 2,500 people? Is it one person per house, or will we be basing it on, you know, five people per family? You know, what are we doing here figure wise?
It's a family unit, so it could be one person, but in that list it's unlikely to be a single person. It's more likely to be couples and families. So it's more likely to be people with young children, and they'll be top of the list. Okay. And then it'll revert to couples, elderly couples, and then, you know, single people will not largely be included within that particular list.
Can we divide that down to how many houses that those people would need? Would that be better?
Well, they're 2,500 family units. That's 2,500.
Oh, right. So
it's 2,500 homes that we would need to be able to accommodate those people on that list.
So it's not 2,500 people, kids are all involved in it. You know,
no, it's
so
2,500 families.
So that's a lot.
Yeah.
That is
And that list, it's been at about that level for quite some time. It is increasing slowly. But the list that's increasing slowly, which is of more concern, is the number of people who are family units who are in temporary accommodation. So they've got into crisis with whether their existing homes or their existing place of residence. And at any one time, we have about 200 families or 200 family units that are in temporary accommodation. So, you know, we've had to find accommodation for them to go in over the short term whilst we try and find something more longer term. And that number has increased over the last couple of years. It used to be about 170 a week on average. It's now up to 200. So we do need to find some accommodation to help, you know, people who are in times of crisis or in times of difficulty get themselves back on the housing ladder.
Would they be able, I mean, when you look at these 2,500 people that need a house, is building a house and giving them a mortgage the right thing? Have they all got jobs? Are they all, you know, because I say it's a case of, we're building a house for you, and are you going to be able to afford it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the detail of all of those individual cases, Ian, but I think what we need is a good mix of, or a good choice of housing. I think the other thing we need to be thinking about is getting the right houses for those 2,500 people. So, and that's where it gets much harder when you talk about, so the government might talk about a number that we need to achieve at 640 units a year, but what's more important to me is that we build the right units in the right places, because it's no good building a 5-bed family home detached that it doesn't meet the needs of, as you say, is not affordable for the family that might not be able to might not be earning that much, and therefore need something that's a bit different. And I think, you know, what we know is we need probably need more 1 and 2 bed houses on the island to help accommodate some of those people on that list. So the bit for us where we need to have a conversation, and we're trying to have a conversation with government, is how are we able to influence the mix of the houses that are built, rather than just simply say, you know, it's a broad brush, 640. Crack
on. Yeah, sure. It's got to be affordable. Is the figure 10,000 for... I'm just thinking, right, OK, why don't you build just 2,500 houses? But by the time you've built them, there'll be more people on the list. So are we sort of working out those figures, 10,000, because, OK, it's 2,500 people on a list at the moment. By the time they're built, they will all be, you know, used up by these people because of the amount of people that are going to be homeless.
It is about your future projections. It's about your current needs and your future needs in terms of housing accommodation on the island. I think, you know, we have a number of challenges that come with housing. So, for example, we know that, you know, 1 in 6 of our homes on the island are currently occupied by a single person who's over 65. So that gives us a challenge about, you know, whether those people want to stay in those homes or whether they prefer to relocate to something smaller, and can we try to do something that will help free up those larger homes and therefore do something slightly differently, which is why the council's been trying to and is developing a strategy to build something called extra care housing. So it's smaller, you know, 1-bed units that are close to supported living. So it might have social care available or nursing care close by, so people can think as they start to get older, they can move into a slightly different kind of accommodation and free up some of the existing houses. So we might not need all the big houses to be built because we can create these extra care type facilities. And our target is to build 700 extra care units over the next 10 years. So that should be our first hit on that particular target. And then they won't be, you know, they're not going to be big units. They're going to be very functional, proper units that help people.
I've got an idea, John. Go on. There's loads of them up Camp Hill.
Thank you for that.
I've been facetious, but maybe there's some common sense in there somewhere.
We are in dialogue with Camp Hill's really complicated, and we are in dialogue with both the Ministry of Justice, Homes England, and the Ministry for Housing and Local Government about trying to secure Camp Hill for the future of the island and the future of our housing needs. Camp Hill's really important. It is a very, very big site, but what we can't do is we can't just take on that site without doing some due diligence, because it may come with some costs that, right, you know, the council doesn't want to pick up whilst it holds that site for, you know, the future of the island. So we're just trying to understand what those costs would be and have a conversation with government about, so how can we bring this forward. The case that I've been making and the leader of the council's been making is that, you know, the island council should get hold of that site for the long-term good of the island, because it doesn't matter whether we develop it over 5, 10, 15, 20, 100 years, as long as we bring it into public ownership for the island to control, then we can use it to meet the island's needs. For as long as it's sitting with the Ministry of Justice and doing nothing, then it isn't really in our control, it's not really within our gift, and we'd really like to think about what we can do with that.
How long do you reckon that'll be then? Before they get their act together on that, then, and well, say, there you go, we'll put it to good use.
Well, there was a very positive meeting only last week, I think, with good representatives of the council, the Ministry of Justice, and Ministry for Housing and Local Government. So that was a positive meeting, and we're just waiting for, you know, the outcome of that to see where that takes us.
Okay, so just say, for instance, the government tell you that you've got to build 10,000 houses, you're doing your best to do that, then you've got all these people there that, you know, possibly come to the Isle of Wight and so on and so forth. Do you then have to, is it your job to then think of, right, okay, now we need a little bit more industry, they need jobs and so on? Does that come under your domain, or is it a case of, no, we've done the houses, other people need to be, you know, doing that?
No, we're still trying to think about how we create jobs and how we, you know, grow the economy of the island at the same time. And I think, you know, the important thing to stress is that the houses that are in that target are the houses for people who are on the island now and who need houses on the island now. We're not building to have people relocate to the island. We're building for island need for islanders, or the numbers are based around island need for islanders. So it's not about how you can import people. And what we need to do is we need to be creating jobs for those people. And that's why we have a regeneration team that's been in place for a couple of years that are really now starting to find their feet, starting to really talk to different businesses and industries about, you know, what they could do on the island and how they could work here. That's why that team's in conversation about, you know, how we can develop the likes of Kingston Marine Park, Venture Keys, and other areas in that whole Medina Valley area and really bring them forward to create jobs and opportunities for island residents.
Okay, I'm positive about this because, as I say, Rhaenyra's coming on Thursday between 12 and 1 to talk about this.
Good.
And she made some really good points last time. She's going to give us an update this time.
Yeah,
but then, just say, for instance, if you're a Newport boy like I am, I walk around Newport quite a lot and I've just seen another big shop close down, Office Outlet. So you've got Office Outlet, Maplin's as well. And I think there is a plan, but there's also a plan for Newport Football Club as well.
Yeah,
is that something that's a bit of a headache for you, or is it something that's going to plan out and it'll be fine? Because we've got a move Newport Football Club, we've got to bring in something else there. Will that be used whilst down the road? You know, they've just shut. Are we going to end up with a load of these big buildings that are a bit of an eyesore, but more importantly, they're not being used by anyone?
It is a bit of a challenge, but As I said earlier, really, that's for the market to determine whether those buildings will be used and how they will be built. And I guess the plans for Newport Football Club will be driven by market need and market demand. So if somebody thinks that they can put something there and that it's going to work as a business, then that's what they'll go ahead and do. I think the bigger challenge for us, which is where I go back to the Improving High Streets Fund, is when buildings have then been emptied and been left, is what can we do as a council to encourage them to be used again? We can't. As a council, that's not within our gift to go and put businesses in, because they're owned by landlords, and landlords are driven by their own kind of need for a return on their investment. But from our perspective, we can find ways of trying to encourage people back into those businesses, and we can find ways of supporting other businesses that may want to relocate to the island. And you know, we were very successful in terms of supporting Ascensos, the contact centre operator at Northwood. And I think that we could use that as a model for supporting other businesses to come across to the island, relocate and bring jobs with them.
Excellent. Look, we're going to take a break there, so it's half time. We come back, and if it's still level at 90 minutes, it'll be a penalty shootout.
I look forward to it.
You like them, don't you?
Yeah.
Back in 2 ticks.
Thank you.
Vectors Radio. 104.6. The heart of the island's community.
Did you love albums and the sound of music on vinyl? Head up to Paul and Tower Music Lounge for a great selection of vintage vinyl and CDs from across the decades, guitars and accessories. We're at the top of Ryde High Street near St John's Hill. We buy and sell records, so pop in and show us your collection. Sit and chat and relax with a coffee. We're open from 9 until 5 from Tuesday to Saturday, and you can call us on 07905 536 541. And if you like a bit of Elvis, this is the place to go.
The Isle of Wight Gothic Circus Festival, the 24th to the 27th of May. Check out the big top 10 for family-friendly circus shows with an adults DJ party till late. The little big top 10 boasts a restaurant, cabaret and burlesque shows. There's live bands, food stands and fair rides, plus the Magoose Utopia Magic Show on Friday and Saturday. For details, to book and discounted ferry travel info, see gothic-circus.co.uk. Under 12 free, under 18s must be accompanied by an adult.
Hi, I'm Charlie from Red Squirrel Property Shop. We're the island's only British property award company, and we specialise in selling and letting homes across the whole island. To get in touch, call us on 521212 or check our website redsquirrelpropertyshop.co.uk and see how we can help you today.
The Isle of Wight Kidney Patient Association is here to help all renal patients on the island. We also offer support to the local dialysis unit. We can help with financial backup for patients and partners, with travel expenses for a hospital treatment. We also have a programme of social events and activities, as well as fundraising that links the community together. Call us on 01983 611 671 or visit our website on iowkidneypatientassociation.com.
Hi, it's Tristan. I have just completed the 4Ps radio course. I have learned to edit voice recordings, how to be more confident when speaking, and to just be yourself. I would really recommend this to people to boost their confidence. It's just a really great experience. If you'd like to try it, contact Ian Mack on 07 817 165 617 or email him at ianmack@vectorsradio.fm. Thank you.
We are your Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
The Mid-Morning Show is proudly sponsored by PC Consultants, the island's leading provider of IT service, consultancy and support to businesses, public sector and private clients across the island. Call us at PC Consultants on 01983 811 711 to find out more about our award-winning service.
Welcome back to part two. We've got the Isle of Wight Council Chief Executive, John Metcalf, who is a Sunderland fan. Have I mentioned it?
Yeah, just a bit, yeah. I'm crying now.
You still look fairly relaxed, which is great. Well, that's what we want you to be, relaxed. We don't want you to be all stressed out and, you know, us two people having an argument. We never get to know anything, otherwise. Lots of things I want to ask you. I did say to you, I made a point of saying I never write anything down. There's a reason why I don't write anything down, because none of the pens work around this place. Now, what did you say? Traffic. That was one thing you said you might want to talk about, and that's the one thing that people moan about the most. Is it?
I think that's one of the things that we do hear an awful lot about in terms of traffic and volumes of traffic and how we manage those traffic and the arrangements, really. And I can understand that because, you know, I think in even my nearly 22 years on the island, I think we've seen the amount of traffic and the volume of traffic increase in some of those key spots. But it's hard to resolve in lots of cases, and whilst we do the best we can...
Can I take you back in time?
Yeah.
It's going to hurt, because we're talking about Wembley again.
Oh, no, don't do that.
In 1978, I went to see England versus Scotland schoolboys. Paul Rideout, I believe, was one of the England schoolboys. Anyway, that's not the point. 98,000 people were inside Wembley, and they said at that point in 1978, that was the figure that lived on the Isle of Wight. 98,000 people. So here we are... 41 years later, and we've probably got about 145,000 on the island.
Yeah, it's 141,000. Yeah,
that's how much we've grown. And so, you know, we used to have lots of hospitals. We've only got one now. Okay, it is bigger. We're decreasing in prison sizes as well, because we used to have three and now we've got two. You know, I look at that and I think with a bog standard view, I just look at it and think, hang on a minute, we've got more people, we've got less hospitals, we've got probably less bobbies on the street, and of course we're going to have more cars on the roads. And yet it is a massive problem. The travel, especially when you get to those summer months, those 6 weeks of the summer months, when somebody told me once that the figures on the island were somewhere around 300,000 people on the island.
Yeah,
that's incredible.
Absolutely.
So how do we cope? You know, what's the future for the roads?
Well, I think the first thing to say is I think those summer months are really important, aren't they, for our economy? So
sure.
I think in a way that's something that we need to support, because without those people coming across for those particular periods of time, then you know, we're going to have less jobs and all the things that flow from that. I just think it's difficult, as you've highlighted, Ian, that there are more people driving, more people want to go to different places, but we are very constrained in terms of the amount of road space that we've got, even to add extra roads or extra lanes or do anything with. It is a bit of a challenge. We are trying to encourage people to think more about green travel, to think about, you know, using buses wherever possible, to use the cycleways, and you know, quite often. I used to cycle to work quite a lot in the past myself, but it's become less easy to do that recently for time constraints. But, you know, lots of people will kind of think about doing things in a different way, or travelling at different times, or car sharing. And I think, again, it's one of those strengths of the island as a community. We may have to come together and come up with a solution ourselves about how best we could do that, or how we might want to do that.
Yeah, doing away with the train didn't help all those years ago. Whoever did that, they just...
Well, you know, and again, you go back to... Oh, I slipped into Geordie there, sorry. But I think that... There's something about looking at our wider infrastructure plans, and part of the new team we put together at County Hall, we've got somebody responsible for looking now at the infrastructure and trying to think about, well, can we reinstate things like the rail link between Ryde and Newport, or the rail link between Cowes and Newport, and how could we put them back together? The council has just, in our recent budget, we've allocated some funds towards looking at the feasibility of a Medina crossing, so a traffic crossing over the Medina, much further towards the centre of town, to keep all that traffic away from Cuppings Bridge that might be going from Ryde to Cowes or Cowes to Ryde. So
would you then do away with the old floating bridge?
Well, no, you...
Is that what you're angling for?
No, you wouldn't actually do that, because, I mean, it's such an important link between those two communities of East Cowes and Cowes, and those communities are, you know, really close, and you know, you couldn't put anything else in that. We've looked at things in the past, I know that you couldn't put anything else in that particular spot where the floating bridge is to get people from the centre of one town to the centre of the other very easily. So no, we wouldn't want to do that.
Just while we're on the subject, I didn't deliberately bring this up because I know it's been a headache for a lot of people. It's not a headache for me because I don't care, because I don't live in East Cowes, and I can't remember the last time I used the floating bridge, to be quite honest. So it doesn't affect me. So it doesn't really. I don't really have an opinion other than, you know, do we really need it? It's cost all that money, and I know you've got funding for it, and yeah. I know it's going to upset people of East Cowes and Cowes, but I just look at it and think, there's a road system.
But I think I think we absolutely do need it, because for all the reasons that we've just talked about before, that if you follow the road system, you put everybody who is travelling from Cowes to East Cowes back through Coppins Bridge and back around that way, which just puts more congestion into the centre of Newport. So that's why the council's been so committed to trying to resolve the issues of the floating bridge, make sure that it's working properly and effectively. And you know, we're now into the high 90% in terms of operational performance at all those scheduled times, and we're just looking to find ways now of improving it as we go forward. So I think we absolutely do need to maintain that process.
Do you know, I'm glad you said that, and it's not lulling you into a false sense of security or anything like that. I just think how brilliant it is that you're sat there saying, yes, we want this, when quite easily you could have walked away from that and said, you know what, we won't have this anymore. There's no such thing as a free ride anymore, and you're not getting one. And you know, but you wanted to do it, you've done it, you've achieved it. Some people will say, well, hang on a minute, it don't work properly, and so on and so forth. We all know the facts and figures. If you look hard enough, read the small print, the facts and figures are quite good, you know, at some yeah. point a few weeks ago. And it's quite sad, because one of your colleagues came in and said, didn't really want to talk about it because it was 100% last, or it was almost 100%, it was up to 98%, and they had one dodgy day or one dodgy
yeah.
crossing.
Yeah.
But they didn't want to say it because they didn't want to draw people into an argument. Well, there shouldn't be an argument, because people would be looking at this and thinking, hang on, if it's that successful, which it is now, where's the issue? Where's the problem?
Hmm.
You talked about the noisy minority, and that's what it is. You've taken an awful lot of flack, you and your colleagues, for something that you've tried your best at, and it's not like you deliberately did it just to sort of annoy people of Cowes. Must feel that way sometimes, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think people have got a right to, they've got a right to expect us to get it right first time. I think, you know, that is a given, and we should get things right first time. I think I'd want to give credit to Dave Stewart, the leader of the council, and to Ian Ward, who's the portfolio holder, who have both given a very strong political steer that we need to crack on, and we need to get the thing fixed and get it working properly for those communities in Cowes. And you know, I've been very pleased to support that, because I think that's the right thing we should do. So we do sometimes get it wrong, and unfortunately that's just the nature of the, it's not just the nature, it is the nature of the business that we're in. We try to do things sometimes, I mean, floating bridges are not something you buy off the shelf, so we do occasionally can get it wrong, and we have to be prepared to put our hands up and say we've got it wrong and try and do what we can to fix it. It's still not perfect. There is still things that we need to do to make it operate at all states of the tide in the most effective and efficient way that it can, and we're committed to trying to do that. But
does it come to a time when it's never ever going to be absolutely 100% perfect because of the tides? You just mentioned they're the worst tides in the world, aren't they? I mean, that's what we've been told, that the Solent and so on and so forth are always going to have issues. So does it come a time when you say, well, hang on a minute, this is as best it can be, stop moaning, it works 95% of the time?
I don't know. I would like to think that we wouldn't get to that. I'd like to think that we get to the magic 100% figure, because I think that's where we've got to have our aspiration, and that's my aspiration for the council in everything that we try and do as officers. We should be trying to get the very best for the Arnhem community, whether it's the floating bridge, whether it's the roads, whether it's buses, whether it's adult social care, children's services. You know, we've got to have the aspiration of being the absolute best that we can and doing the absolute best we can for the island's community. And you know, I often say to our staff, when I talk to the staff as a staff group, that we're quite unusual, because you know, the majority of staff who work for the Isle of Wight Council are also live in the council area, so they're recipients of the services as well as the deliverers of the services. So we've all got families, we've all got neighbours, we've all got friends, we're all living in a community that are using council services all of the time, so we're all getting opinions about council services and giving opinions about council services, but we all need to be able to speak up and say that our aspiration is to be the absolute best that we can. And you know, from my perspective, I have a bit of a mantra that where we need to get to is we've got to go from just being good to being absolutely great, and that's the aspiration that all of the council staff share with me, that we want to provide great services. So no, I would never take second best as being good enough. We've always got to strive for the best.
Okay, well that's good to hear, and you know, it sounds like you're the right person for the job. If you was doing an interview now, that I'd be saying that at the end of it, yeah, I think we should consider him. because you know, it's not just a case of oh come on, we got up to 95%, that's what I would have done.
No.
But no, you want to be better.
Yeah.
Which is great. Yeah. And you know, we mentioned that the noisy minority, and they are a bit of a pain in the backside, they really are. I heard noisy minority the other day shouting about 5G. And yep. You just think, is this something, again, myths. We're not going to get everything done in this hour, by the way. We're going to have to come back.
Oh, no.
But there are those myths, those things, what the council does do and does have a say on. You know, 5G sounds great to me. It's, you know, from a business point of view, yep. I'm thinking that'd be magical yeah. for us. But there are a few people that are moaning and groaning because of the health risks, supposedly. But, you know, I'm looking at you, and I know what your answer is going to be, but is that down to you, 5G? You know, is it your fault that 5G might happen if I'm one of those grumpy people? Do you have a say in that?
No, we don't. Very, very little of a say, to be honest, no. Again, it's government policy, government strategy to roll out 5G, but they're relying on the telecom providers to be able to do that, and to do that in the way that they can do it that gives them their return on their investment. So, you know, the reality is our ability to stop that rollout is very limited, if that's indeed what we wanted to do. You know, it might be somebody wants to put a 5G aerial on council land, then we might have an opportunity then, but even in terms of planning permission for aerials, the government have made it very permissive so that the telecoms operators can just crack on and do what they would like to do in terms of rolling out the 5G process, because that's what government feel is best for the island. Now, I respect people's views. I respect people would like to have the council speak out against it or to lobby against it, or and that might be the same for a number of other cases. But, you know, the council's got to find a balanced view wherever it possibly can, if that's indeed what it wants to do. But I go back to the earlier point I made about we have a finite capacity within the organisation, and I have to use that capacity to deal with the things that we can actually influence on behalf of the island, not the things that we can't. And that's where we really have to try and keep our focus.
I mean, in a nutshell, I'm just looking at this 5G thing. So there's people moaning and groaning about it and saying, oh, the council ought to do something about it. The only thing that you can do is when somebody applies to put a mast somewhere, and if it's on your land, you can sort of make a bit of a noise and say no. And then all that happens is, I'm guessing, they'll go to the mainland, appeal it, and they'll get it through anyway.
Well, only from a planning perspective, and actually that's quite an interesting one, because when you talk about council land, the council ends up having two roles. So when it's dealing with its land, it's the landowner. So that's like somebody coming to you and saying, can I put a mast in your garden?
Yeah.
And you can say yes or no. Planning doesn't really matter about that. So if we own the land, then we can say yes or no as the landowner, and planning doesn't have anything to do with it. But if it was somebody else's land and we had to deal with it as a planning application, which is what we would do, then again, as I say, the government have relaxed the rules. The National Planning Policy Framework has kind of relaxed the rules around 5G masts, and it would be very hard to turn down.
Okay. That's, but equally, you don't have much of a say.
No.
Not really. The overall say, you can't control it. So people saying, you know, if you're out there going, oh, 5G, I don't think we should have it, you know, Blooming Council, that will do something about it. They can't, all right? It's another one of those things that they don't have much jurisdiction.
We absolutely can't stop it. I mean, there is a function for councils to be able to speak on behalf of the community that they represent. So if there was a view from the majority of the island that that's what they wanted the council to do, the council could collectively take a view that it wanted to speak out against 5G and then lobby government. I think my conversation with the councillors would always be, is that the best use of our resources when actually we've got loads of other things that we need to do that we can actually spend our money on and affect on behalf of the island?
Okay. Look, as I said, we ain't going to get all this done, so you're going to have to come back. I got one moan and one moan only. All right. I'm a one moan only kind of guy.
And you got your pen working now as well.
It's working. I've written three words on here now. The adult social care, they came in last year and they were brilliant and kind of opened a lot of people's eyes with just how big the job is.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just what a fantastic job they are doing. We had the adoption peeps come in as well, and fostering and adoption. And I said to them, look, you've got to do something about that horrible window that people will see every day when they got the dual carriageway. They look over and they've got this adoption fostering thing in the window. Those little square things.
Oh, okay.
That horrible window. You've seen it, haven't you?
No, I don't drive up the dual carriageway that often.
It's right at the bottom. You can't miss it.
I look for it on the way back to the office.
It's when you walk back, you'll see it. Okay. You'll walk by it.
Right.
Oh, you've got to see it. And then you've got to think, hang on a minute. All joking aside, you look at that and you think, okay, everybody driving up the dual carriageway will see that. I look at it and I think, surely the kids that want to be or need to be adopted deserve better than that.
Right, okay.
Because it's not, seriously, no. You look at that window and you think, that ain't changed for years.
Okay, I'll take that away.
You've got these little square things and you think, for goodness sake. And I know that I had a bit of a moan and a groan at, who was it who came in? It was Claire Kennard that came in and I said about 30 High Street, your window, you're looking through the window, it looks like Steptoe's yard. If Steptoe had a shop, that's what it would look like.
Yeah.
And now they're doing something about it. And they're enthused by it because now they're getting people to show their businesses in the window and so on.
Yeah.
And I'm just looking at this window there that you'll see on the way back, and you'll walk by and you'll think, God, why didn't I see that before?
I'll definitely take that away. But what I would say is that I think some of the work that we've been doing around adoption and fostering in terms of getting new placement or new carers has been of the first order in terms of the way people have gone out and the way we've done the marketing campaign. I think we've increased our numbers by 20 over the course of the last year, and that's a much better way of helping and supporting our young people. So I'll take that away and we'll have a look at that one.
I couldn't agree more, but following it on, you think, well, hang on a minute. If that's how the whole thing is perceived, people will see that. You might get more and more people that want to help out, because it really surprised me when those people come in and they said about how many people that are in need of assistance and so on and
absolutely,
so forth. You
yeah.
just think, right, okay, talking about the best they can be. Well, if they had something up there which said exactly what it was and it didn't look as poor as it does, I'm sorry, it might get more and more people involved, and you might be helping more and more people. And that's the most important thing. That's my biggest moan of the day. It's over.
I'll take that one.
Yeah?
No problem.
You have a look on the way back.
I'll have a look on the way back.
I might even walk you back, so you I'll show you.
But I know what you mean now.
You do know.
Yeah,
you know.
What you mean.
It looks horrible.
Yeah.
It doesn't even look. It looks like they've been shoved out there because, I don't know, they might smell. So, I mean, look, you can't have your own office. We're going to put you down the road a bit. You know, that's what it looks like.
Okay. It's actually the print unit.
Is that what it is?
It is the print unit.
But it's just the advertising thing. I think there's local companies out there that would do your deal. I'm sure of it. Not I don't know any, but I mean, you know, for the sake of these youngsters.
Yep.
Need to be adopted, need homes and so on and so forth. I just look at that and I think, what a positive thing that would be to change that. If that's one thing that we can do this lunchtime.
I'll take that one away.
What's the one question I haven't asked you yet that you was expecting?
I don't know, actually. I think you've probably covered most of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've covered quite a few.
You know, written down three words at least.
Well, three words is good, isn't it?
Okay.
Three words.
Are
we not going to penalties though? We're all right.
No. I think I've won this one. No, I think you've won this one. It's, you know, if people want to know more about the council, how do they do that without casting aspersions, without sort of doing that, blooming council? What, is there a newsletter and so on? Is there something that they can look at and educate themselves rather than give you guys a hard time?
Yeah, we've been quietly developing a newsletter that we can send into people's inboxes. So once a month we produce a different kind of newsletter that people can subscribe to by going to the website. And it talks about some of the less newsy items, so not the sort of stuff that will kind of hit your news program or the county press, but just the stuff that's going on in the background. So, you know, how a carer's looked after, or a day in the life, somebody from the integrated equipment store. So if people want to go to the website, they'll find out how they can sign up to that newsletter and subscribe to that newsletter. And once a month, we'll just send a bit more of the human side of the council, so people can really see where the work goes on, rather than all the stuff that you just see in the press all the time.
You've got a hard-working team, and I think people need to realise that. It's not a machine that goes around and kicks people in the ankles and warrants people saying, oh, blooming council, they do this, do that. It's not like it was 30 years ago. You ain't got the money to chuck around.
No, we've got to be very careful about how we spend our money, and I think you're right. We've got an amazing team. We're hopeful. We've been shortlisted for some awards with the Municipal Journal, so we're hopeful that we might get something out of those as well to represent the team. So
good luck with that. We're running out of time, literally. We've got about 5 seconds. Thank you very much for coming.
You're
very
welcome.
Again,
I'd love to.
Okay,
absolutely.
We'll sort that out very, very soon. Thank you, John Metcalf.
Thank you.
Fancy taking the first penalty?
This radio, FM 104.6.
Vectis Radio.